The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Still to come this hour, Wes Reynolds will talk Big Ten football with Wes. We'll also talk some Heisman odds here coming up momentarily. Before we continue our AFC South discussion, have you seen the footage of Deuce Vaughn at the Cowboys camp?
Not at all.
Okay, it's on the screen right now. Look at that. He looks like he's a middle schooler out there. Like, he is so small, dude. Like, this takes small to a whole nother level. This isn't Darren Sproles small. This is like...
Oh, wow. I had to figure out what channel you run.
Look at that. It is startlingly small. I don't know. Maybe it'll be hard to find him if he catches on. I don't know. We tackled him, coach. We just didn't see him.
That was Sproles all the time, right?
Like, yeah, this kid. Whoa, man. We'll see.
5'5".
5'5". Wow. And you know, if they list him at 5'5", you wonder, is he 5'5"?
Right.
But against all those other guys, he looks super duper small. Speaking of running back, speaking of the AFC South, which we had talked about earlier, let's coalesce here with Jonathan Taylor this weekend. Jonathan Taylor demands a trade, Kelly. And this has been sort of the theme of the offseason with these running backs. Saquon threatening that he's not going to play for the Giants. Then they came up with an $11 million deal, basically, put that possibility aside. But Jonathan Taylor this weekend.
Yeah, this escalated quickly this weekend. Yes, it did.
Well, this escalated quickly.
This got out of hand quickly.
Jonathan Taylor demands a trade. Jim Irsay immediately says no. No. The Colts say Taylor reported back pain during his pre-training camp physical that was deemed to be from an injury that was not sustained while playing for Indianapolis, league source telling ESPN. The situation now has the team considering whether to place Taylor on the non-football injury list. The plot thickens, which could result in Indianapolis withholding his salary, the source said. So, what do we think of the situation of the Colts this season as well as the rest of the AFC South? Well, this is Jonathan Taylor's tweet on the subject, Kelly, at JT23. One, never had back pain. Two, never reported back pain. Not sure who sources are, but find new ones.
So in about a three-day time span, you had this guy demand a trade. Jim Irsay immediately come out and say, no, we're not trading him, and then had some other things to say about the running back market. And then this story comes out where it sure feels like it's leaked information from inside the Colts to whatever reporter, so they have an excuse to put him on the non-injury list and not pay the guy. And then he comes out in this tweet saying, denying anything about talking about back pain with the Colts at all. So this got to a place of real ugly real quick.
We touched on this briefly with Drew last week. He actually beat me to the punch on this, but it was something I wanted to talk about because Will Hill and I had been talking about it off air too, which is these running backs just really can't seem to hold the two thoughts together. Yes, in the moment you are very important, but your shelf life is such that your compensation is going to be commensurate with that. And so the overrating of your position in modern day football in a pass happy game and you're coupled with your stunted shelf life. I mean, let's just take, as we go through the AFC South, let's just take the Titans. Derrick Henry, yeah, we all consider the gold standard of NFL running backs. All right, so let me lean on Aaron Schatz, the founder of Football Outsiders. No longer with Football Outsiders, though he owns the DVOA proprietary licensing, so that's still his. He was the creator of that as well. But, you know, the Titans are second in the AFC South. They're 7.5. But here's what Aaron Schatz and Football Outsiders used to say about running backs. It is much more valuable to have a running back that can move the chains consistently versus one who, you know, gets 2 yards, 2 yards, 2 yards, and then breaks open a 75-yarder. Because generally, that, you know, those home run hitters, that's not a sustainable way of success. Mm-hmm. Derrick Henry for very long has been able to overcome that because he will wear you down and then he will punch out the big run. Derrick Henry's not getting any younger. And so from the Titans' perspective, I know I moved on from Taylor here, but from the Titans' perspective, as great as Mike Vrabel is as a coach, and by the way, I think he's one of the best, if not the best, mm-hmm, right? Like, he's phenomenal. He's 41 wins in 4 seasons with that franchise. But the play-to-play efficiency numbers for a guy like Derrick Henry are just not there. And so you wonder at 29 years old now, how long can you expect that from him?
Oh, I think it's...
That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's been great. You've had a great decade. You're going to the Hall of Fame. You've been unbelievable. But it's like, if you just jumped in on now, would you give Derrick Henry all the money in the world? Maybe you would. But would you do it for Jonathan Taylor? Would you do it as great as he's been?
I don't think you would for Derrick Henry
right now
either.
That's
what
I mean.
The landscape it's changed and it continues to change, and it's not heading in that direction. So that's where I think it makes it very interesting with what Jonathan Taylor did, because, bro, why are you messing with your job when you're still under contract for a year? You know what I mean? Like, it's different with some of these guys that got franchise tagged and stuff who aren't under contract, but you're still getting paid for a year before you got to deal with this stuff. And, you know, now you're putting yourself in a situation where, the team might, the team in a roundabout way might end up punishing you and not paying you for what you just tried to pull.
Yeah, I mean.
Cool if you want to be traded, but, like, you've seen what the market is for running backs all summer. What makes you think the Colts are going to run to trade you? They're not going to get anything back.
Not get anything back for you. I know I'm putting the Colts and the Titans in the same conversation, but there's a lot of similarities here. The Titans are 7.5. The Colts are 6.5 in terms of the season win totals. Titans plus 350 to win this Jaguars-heavy division, if you will. The Colts 6-1. So the Titans, they brought in Andre Dillard to play left tackle. He wasn't very good in Philly. And their projected right tackle, Nicholas Petit-Frere, remember, he played poorly, but then he got suspended 6 games for gambling. So they did draft Peter Skoronski, but it's one of these things, getting back to Aaron Schatz and Football Outsiders and their research, just talking about the running backs with Derrick Henry earlier and how you want to, play-by-play efficiency with running backs. With the offensive line, you can't really project turnarounds from year to year. Like with cornerbacks, when they used to assess individual players, like a cornerback, and I always use D'Angelo Hall as an example of this, he could be one of the worst cornerbacks in the NFL play-by-play 1 year, but the next year he could be one of the best. You couldn't project it. With offensive lines, they don't change that quickly. And so that's what makes like the Titans and the Colts offensive lines also super suspect, because just mentioning what I did about the Titans, your reinforcements besides Skoronski, very questionable. And with the Colts, remember the Colts went, this is also the Jonathan Taylor thing, right, Kelly, which is, they went from having the greatest offensive line to giving up like double the sacks last year.
Yeah.
And there's no projection system that will tell you, oh, that's going to turn around. No, it usually doesn't. What happened to them was such an anomaly. So you don't expect it to be an anomaly back. So I don't know, man. Like, I think both of those teams have massive question marks, obviously. The market reflects that. And though the Texans are so bad, as great as D'Amico Ryans was as a defensive coordinator with the Niners, to expect that to turn around despite it being C.J. Stroud, them trading up for Will Anderson, I do think, some people are saying, well, all three rookies might start day one. I don't know about that. I don't think Will Levis does.
I don't think Will Levis does. I think the other two do.
I think for sure C.J. Stroud does. Richardson, probably.
I think he does.
Yeah.
I mean, think about what you're talking about. You're talking about offensive line issues, right? Easiest way to get around that is a running quarterback. That helps out.
Yep.
And realistically, what are the goals for Indy this year, right? I do think they could be second in that division, but it's not going to mean they have a great record. It's just, Tennessee ended up going to Levis, and there's a bit of a struggle there, and they tumble down to third.
So is there a bet here? Just the Jaguars division, huh? You'll lay the -165.
My favorite bet of the offseason.
Sometimes bets don't have to be that sexy. Sometimes what's obvious is staring us in the face. Now, do NFL teams exceed expectations or fall very short of them every year? Yes. Will it be one of these three, the Texans, the Titans, or the Colts? I'm not thinking it will.
Yeah, I don't think so. And look, the Titans, like, if you told me, would I be as bullish on the Jags if I knew for sure that at the end of the year, Ryan Tannehill and DeAndre Hopkins are all playing in these games, in week 15, then, yeah, I'm probably not putting as much as I am on the Jags. But what I think is at some point this is going to be a rebuilding situation, and you're going to put Levis in there. You're going to monitor carries for Derrick Henry. You're going to watch how much of a workload you're giving to DeAndre Hopkins, because you want to make sure those guys are good to go the following year when you hopefully have a young quarterback now ready to really go.
Will the DeAndre Hopkins to the Titans thing end up being a tree falling in the forest?
Absolutely. It could be.
It could be. But the sneakier, less publicized wideout, Calvin Ridley, remember, has already been in the Jaguars' fold now for a long time.
Nobody talks about it.
Calvin Ridley, 90 catches for 1,374 yards and 9 touchdowns in 2020 with the Falcons before, you know, that parlay mishap when Florida had sports betting for a minute. He got in there under the clever name. You ready for this, Kelly? Calvin Ridley. That's how they got him. That's your counter, Calvin Ridley.
Oh, man.
So,
History of Florida sports betting.
So, anyway, we're going division by division. We're just using, like, news stories to just prompt our discussions on this. We've done a few of these now in the AFC. This is definitely the division where it's the least exciting of the bunch.
But there's a bet. I think you and I talked off-air last week where it's part of my... I would say part of one of my betting goals, at least this summer, is to not roll into the NFL season with as much futures exposure as I've had the past couple years. Some of that's gone right, some of it's gone wrong, but I'm kind of narrowing down my bets and making sure that I'm being very specific with what I'm betting, and I love the Jags.
You know what I would be interested in seeing, and I haven't done this, but I should have probably before this segment, but some of them have exact order of division or something. I wonder if there's like, if the Texans finish second or something like that, would it shock you? Maybe it would. But like, would you take a big bang for your buck bet on that?
I think it's worth exploring.
Worth exploring. See what the number is on that. Heisman Trophy odds to come. Big Ten College Football Week with the guide coming out Thursday here at VSiN. We'll get into all that next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? Drive too fast and you could hear the sound of your vehicle crashing because one way or another, speeding catches up with you. Paid for by NHTSA. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Let's talk some college football. It is college football week here. Our guide, college football betting guide, comes out on Thursday. Our pro football guide already out. And by the way, Humans and Company. Am I allowed to say it that way? Humans and Company? Does he take the charge or Adam Burke and Company?
I think it would be more appropriately Adam Burke from what I saw on there. Yeah, okay. He's doing a lot of it.
They do a bang-up job with all of these. All of our guides are really, really good. Adam Burke, obviously, with baseball. I associate it more with baseball, but he really does all of these. Humans used to be the guy that, you know, sort of spearheaded all these, but they're great.
And he's still doing a ton.
College football, it may be the best of the bunch. I don't want to say that because I don't want to disparage the other ones because the other ones are great, too. We all did all of our conference picks, you know, who we thought would win the East and West of the Big Ten. Every conference we did... that was broken up, or if they weren't broken up, we did first and second place and who we thought would win each conference, who we thought would be in the last four-team playoff that we'll ever have, because we expand, of course, the playoff next year, thank goodness, and who we thought would be national champion. Heisman Trophy, we'll get to the Big Ten with Wes, because Wes is born and raised in Big Ten country. We'll start with that later on. But
Real quick, Gil, I want to just hit on something that you just brought up real quick. Like, this is... I don't know, for everything you do get at VSiN, like, our guides before the season are some of the best, one of the best 100%. Things you're going to get. And I don't really care what sport it is, because kind of like you just said, I just thought in my head right now, I'm like, what do I think the best preseason guide is? I don't really know, because a lot of them are so dang good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. And college football second to none. We look at Heisman Trophy odds. Obviously, this is the most bet upon of all awards here, and Heisman Trophy... We are staring down the barrel of will Caleb Williams, the headline here, will Caleb Williams become the first back-to-back winner since Archie Griffin in the mid-70s? Archie Griffin, who was running back for Ohio State, the only other time was back-to-back. Caleb Williams, who won the Heisman last year. I know, yes, I had the Max Dillon one, but didn't quite get there at 100-1. Caleb Williams deserved it, no question about it. He's the only one in single digits here. He's plus 550 to become the back-to-back winner. Now, let me just say before we move on to anybody else, when we talk about awards in other sports, let's talk baseball. You know, what's the big thing with those baseball writers who vote on Hall of Fame? Well, they don't want to let anybody in the first ballot, right? They want that to be a sacred thing. They are very self-important. They believe themselves to be very highbrow stewards of this amazing institution. Of course, they don't have Barry Bonds in there, so they can go to hell. But that's a different story. But they really feel big about the first ballot stuff, right? So it's an institution that they deem so close to their hearts. And so they vote accordingly with certain subjective elements in there. I'm trying to think of like another sport. Oh, we talked about when we talk about like, you know, the Nikola Jokic thing is the most recent example, right? That maybe some of those NBA voters, maybe, we're speculating, we don't know, but maybe some of them were like, you know what? We don't want him to be on the short list, pardon me, of back-to-back-to-back MVP winners, a la Larry Joe Bird, Bill Russell, and who was the third on that as well? I can't remember now. But anyway, it's only three all-time, and that was, I want to say it was Wilt. Those are the only three that did it before. We don't want Nikola Jokic to be there, and so he wasn't voted in. Whether you believe that or not, it's possible and certainly was incumbent upon us to bring that up. Yes, it was Wilt Chamberlain, the other three-time back-to-back-to-back. I don't think this exists is where I'm getting at with college football because, Kelly, there are roughly 5 bajillion Heisman voters.
Yep.
And so
Some of whom that don't even work in the sport anymore or in sports.
Yeah.
Because I know some.
And I know some who don't have a Heisman vote who you'd be like, well, how do you not have a Heisman vote?
Who did we just, was it Felica?
Felica doesn't have a Heisman vote.
Chris the Bear Felica
yeah.
doesn't have a Heisman vote.
It's unbelievable. So do I think that same sort of mentality that I just described in baseball betting and in basketball betting will exist here? I don't. So I think Caleb Williams is a justified plus 550 favorite without the layer of, yeah, but we don't want anybody to have it back-to-back like Archie Griffin did. And if you believe that USC is going to get to the playoff this year, which I actually do, I think that's obviously the correct play. Now, does this mean that there isn't a bet to be made elsewhere? Because, as you can see, after Caleb Williams, including Caleb Williams, it is nothing but a quarterback parade. The reason that it is a quarterback parade, by the way, the first non-quarterback on this list, I'm thinking, is Marvin Harrison Jr. Am I seeing that right? At 20-1? So,
yep.
So that's the thing. So the reason for that is a non-quarterback, if we look at Heisman history, a non-quarterback who has won the Heisman, it basically happens, Kelly, roughly every 5 years. So the last non-quarterback to win the Heisman, Devontae Smith, 2020. Before that, Derrick Henry, 2015. Before that, Mark Ingram, 2009. Before that, Reggie Bush, 2005. Who could forget that? And those are all since the year 2000. That's it. That's the list of non-quarterbacks. So after Caleb Williams, it's Jaden Daniels of LSU at 12-1. Quinn Ewers at Texas at 12-1. Kate Klubnik at Clemson at 14-1. And your guy, Jordan Travis Kelly, at your alma mater, Florida State at 14-1. Drake May, who's getting a lot of love, is at 16-1. And Bo Nix, it should be mentioned, in his 17th year of college football, also at 16-1. You have a bet, don't you?
I do have a bet in this market. I know this is going to...
Let me guess.
Yeah, not going to surprise anybody. What you got, Gil? What's my bet?
Jordan Travis.
That's right. Ding, Homer. Ding, 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 ding.
He's awesome, by the way.
I think the other thing worth pointing out in this market this year, it is fascinating, and I'm interested to see if voters, I think your Jokic comparison was interesting, and it might translate over this year to the Heisman market of, okay, you're talking about a year where you don't have the guy at an Alabama, right, at Clemson. Clemson, you know, you have Klubnik coming back, but it's not like a guy who's done a ton there in the past. I think some of the schools that we look to right away, Georgia, right? A lot of these guys don't have returning quarterbacks that did big things in their career. Ohio State, right? Same thing. You keep rolling down that list. Does it make it more likely that Caleb Williams wins this award? Maybe, and maybe there is some sentimental, like, hey, USC hasn't been in the big picture in a while. Like, let's go back out west and give the Heisman there. Maybe, but we also know how much there is an East Coast bias, and there is East Coast voters out there that aren't going to see as many of his games. So I think that's interesting. My point of saying that is I think some of these longer shots, there might actually be some value in this year. If they have big seasons, I think Caleb Williams might be a little bit too short here. The one that is interesting is Drake May, where his odds have kind of drifted a bit. I think where some of these other guys have gotten bet up, his have drifted a little bit, which is interesting to me. I like Jordan Travis, though, as far as what you're talking about teams that are expected to do well this year and returning a talented, experienced quarterback. There's few on this list, and he's one of them that checks those boxes. So for a Florida State team whose toughest games are LSU to start the year, and that will be a tough game, LSU to start the year, but then at Clemson you're talking, you win those couple games, Florida State's real live to possibly have an undefeated season this year. So, yeah, I took a bit of him. I think it was 15-1 I got him at. But, yeah, a little small way for me to bet on Florida State this year.
Well, I think there's some correlation to what you're just saying. If you think FSU could get to the playoff, yes, then that makes a lot of sense. Let me talk about some other people, though.
And I think that applies to all three of the big ACC quarterbacks, right? Like, if you think that about Klubnik, if you think that about Drake May, same thing. You're probably betting this.
You know, Kyle McCord, new at Ohio State. What can you expect of him? No one really knows. I mean, if he can even approach what C.J. Stroud did, it's going to be awesome. But Heisman, I guess we don't know. He certainly has the receivers, right, to be as successful as possible. Do you want to take a flyer on that sight unseen, though, as the main guy for a whole season? I don't know that you do. Drew Aller at Penn State, a lot is expected of him. But again, what do you really know? The guy that sort of leaps off that second column, though, is Blake Corum of Michigan. 28-1. Yes, there is a Donovan Edwards quote-unquote problem when it comes to the Heisman, and some people think Donovan Edwards is actually the better pro prospect of the two Michigan backs. But Blake Corum, if we remember last year, he ends up missing basically like the last 3.5 games of that season. And he got hurt midway through that Illinois game. I mean, he could have been a super contender last year.
Yep.
So I don't know, Blake Corum at 28-1 certainly has an interesting story based on what we saw of him last year. But again, you know, does Donovan Edwards then break out 80-yard touchdown runs and you're like, well, they're just as good. Like Dr. Bob thinks Donovan Edwards is just as good as Blake Corum by his numbers. And Donovan Edwards kind of proved that over and over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I think I'd need longer odds on Corum.
Yeah, maybe so. But it is a name that deserves mention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was great last year, right? Until he got hurt. Yeah. I think also McCarthy is interesting with them too, right? Does he have, when I was talking before about teams, right, that are good teams coming back with experienced quarterbacks, okay, he checks those boxes, but is it a team that's going to throw the ball enough, right, where he can rack up the stats to compare to what a Caleb Williams does?
Yeah, I mean, it really has to be correlated with how well you think the team's going. If you think FSU is getting to the playoff, Jordan Travis should trigger a wager. If you think USC is, don't think twice. Just bet Caleb Williams as well. I think I would bet Corum based on the number up there. But Williams and Travis I love as well, given their numbers. Gotta put something on Caleb Williams because I think it's going to happen. We'll come back. Big Ten Talk with Wes next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Power ratings, picks, previews, predictions. Pro, it's alliteration. As in, become a VSiN Pro subscriber, getting all access pass to our betting tools, betting splits, and the 2023 College Football Betting Guide. Thursday's release of the College Football Betting Guide and our previously released NFL Betting Guide will have you ready to turn a profit on the gridiron this year. And the only way to get the guides and everything we have to offer is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And you can do exactly that at VSiN.com/subscribe. It's a gots to subscribe situation. Skill Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. Let's bring in the gentleman who was nominated by a tweet earlier as Handicapper of the Year. He's the glue that holds this whole operation together. Long Shots co-host that he does with Matt Brown and Kelly Bidlin, co-host of VSiN Tonight with Humans, is Wes Reynolds, everybody. How you doing, Wes?
As part of that nomination, Gil, the July golf results don't count, right?
Wait, say again? I missed that. I was chopping. What did you say? Say again?
As part of that gentleman's nomination, the July golf results don't count, do they?
They do not. There's a special carve-out that you can get rid of a month. That's right. Wes, that's quite all right. You have given many, many winners, not only this year, but years past. I have so much to talk to you about, including the Indianapolis Colts, who I know you know very well from your days in Indiana. Obviously, we're going to talk Big Ten football here, and we want to talk about a golf situation yesterday at the 3M Open. Get your comments on that. But first, Kelly and I were just talking about the Heisman. Caleb Williams, the short shot at +550. We sort of talked about Jordan Travis and Blake Corum. Is there a Heisman thought from you? Maybe it is Caleb Williams. Maybe it's somebody else. What do you got?
Well, he's the rightful favorite, and I think that offense is going to be explosive. And Lincoln Riley's second year out there in LA, and they bring a lot of personnel back. They bring most of the offensive line back. So I think that he's probably the rifle favorite. The guy in the mid-range that I think is actually getting a little bit of love is right there in that conference, and that's Michael Penix Jr., the former Indiana quarterback who had a great first season out there in Seattle. And, you know, the fact that he actually had an offensive line that could protect him, which he did not in Indiana. So he's going to put up big numbers. They're a dark horse, I think, to win the Pac-12. I think USC and Washington, I personally have them 1-2 in the conference. Carson Beck is going to get a little bit of love simply because he's with the defending national champion. And, you know, Stetson Bennett was the candidate for them. And Carson Beck, I think, is more highly touted. He's not a walk-on like Bennett was. But when you're within that power program, it's kind of just like plug and play. You can see why he's getting a little bit of love. I'm a little bit higher on Penn State, and we'll get to that later. So Drew Aller, who's got a lot of expectations, five-star quarterback, was Mr. Football in the state of Ohio. He's getting a lot of love, I think, for Penn State. They ended the season really strong last year with that Rose Bowl win over Utah. So those are the three that really kind of stand out to me, at least at this moment.
All right, well, let's transition to the Big Ten, because I think this is a great starting off point with college football, and you just alluded to a few of these teams. Obviously, odds to win the Big Ten as a whole, Michigan and Ohio State, no surprise, are the top co-favorites at plus 165, and then the aforementioned Penn State Nittany Lions at 6-1. Now, what do those three teams have in common? They're all in the East. And so you have a situation where, again, with Ohio State, as you just mentioned, Kyle McCord is going to be your starting quarterback this year. You know, he's got to be just that amazing for Ohio State to be as successful as they want to be. Obviously, 2 years now removed from winning the Big Ten championship. Michigan is now the ruler of the roost. They've got J.J. McCarthy now with no competition from Cade McNamara. He's gone on to Iowa. We'll get to them later. So it's J.J. McCarthy is starting quarterback in Michigan. Like, Ohio State, they're so stacked. Like, if you look at their best players, Travion Henderson might be their, like, 10th best player, right? Michigan, though, is the team that now is the defending Big Ten champion. They're the one that has gotten to the college football semis 2 years in a row. And then there is Penn State. You just talked about how much is expected of the Nittany Lions. Yes, their season win total is not quite as high as Ohio State and Michigan's. But if ever there was a year where the Nittany Lions might just get to the promised land, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the year with Drew Aller as their starting quarterback. They have a pretty favorable schedule. I mean, if you look at it, maybe they get into their Michigan game, you know, without really much of a mark up to that point, with the exception of the Ohio State game. I mean, there's so many possibilities. Stack those three teams up for me. How do you see it?
Yeah, and you're right, Gil, about Ohio State being so loaded talent-wise. And if you were to say, okay, player for player, who has the most talented roster of the three, I would still give the edge to Ohio State. But the gap is really narrowed. If you ever look at, like, the recruiting rankings from the various services, all three of these programs are essentially in the top 10 nationally. Ohio State usually resides in the top five, and then Michigan and Penn State are just right below. But I think the talent gap is narrowed. I'll start with Michigan, as they are the defending Big Ten champion. Soft schedule, obviously, very early for these guys. The fact that they don't play a Power 5 school in the non-conference. So if Jim Harbaugh is going to get that four-game suspension, that's the right way to do it, mm-hmm. In terms of the fact that you're getting East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, and then the opener with Rutgers. The defense, I think, should be very good. They were sixth nationally. They lost three draft picks, but they do bring back seven starters. So I think they'll be fine there. The one maybe concern for Michigan, because they will run the ball very well behind this offensive line that won the Joe Moore Award for the best O-line in the country the last two seasons and bring back three starters. They don't really have that go-to guy at wide receiver. We'll see if Cordelius Johnson or Roman Wilson emerge, but that's kind of the one concern I have for Michigan's offense. Ohio State, even with the new quarterback, I'm not really concerned with the offense because they got the two-headed monster, Travion Henderson, Mayan Williams in the backfield. Of course, Marvin Harrison Jr., who was the former teammate of Kyle McCord at St. Joseph's Prep in Philadelphia. He comes back along with Emeka Egbuka. So they're loaded at receiver. But defensively is maybe where the chink in the armor is. Even though they improved under Jim Knowles last year, if you look at the two biggest games that Ohio State played, and that was against Michigan and that was against Georgia, and guess what they gave up? 43.5 points and 8.9 yards of play. That's not going to get it done, and that's what's been holding Ohio State back from, you know, advancing to that final and winning another national championship. Ohio State also has a tougher schedule. They got to go to South Bend against Notre Dame.
Yep.
They got to play Wisconsin against former Buckeye Lou Bickle, who takes the job there in Madison this year. So not the easiest of schedule, but that does point me to Penn State, because Penn State, they got swept by Ohio State and Michigan for the second straight year in 2022. They're also 3-9 combined against Ohio State since 2017. However, Penn State, I think, is kind of back to being Penn State. You know, the way that they used to play, putting the off-the-field scandals aside. But they're back to kind of being a tough team, and I like the way that they've been last year. The fact that they went to the Rose Bowl, and I know that they had slightly more talent than Utah, but I thought they had tough Utah in the Rose Bowl. And if you watch Utah and Kyle Whittingham, nobody out-toughs that team. And Penn State found a way to do it. So you got the new quarterback, Drew Lar. You have a couple receivers. Dante C. transfers in from Kent State. Malik McClung from Florida State. Add that to the offensive line where they have a first-rounder for Shanu at left tackle. And then the running game. They couldn't run the ball for a couple years until last year. Now you have Nicholas Singleton, Catron Allen, who almost combined for 2,000 yards last year and 22 touchdowns. And then they had dividends with Manny Diaz as a defensive coordinator. They have 7 starters back. They were top 10 nationally for points allowed, yards per play, red zone defense, takeaway, opponent completion percentage. You name it, they were probably in the top 10 in the category. So I think Penn State, they got to go to Columbus, but they do get Michigan at home. I think they've got the team to challenge for the first Big Ten title since 2016.
Okay, so that's a 6-1 bet on them? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, that's what I'm thinking. Okay, so, and then just out west, it's Wisconsin, it's Iowa, and then it's everybody else. Wisconsin, obviously, you mentioned Luke Fickell's the new head coach, Tanner Mordecai by way of SMU, and obviously by way of Oklahoma as well. He is the starting quarterback with Wisconsin. And Iowa, for as just inept as they are offensively, as good as they were defensively, now it is Cade McNamara. Like, they just still seem to get it done every year in terms of having a winning record, getting to a bowl. What do you think happens? Is it 1-2 Wisconsin-Iowa, or is it Iowa-Wisconsin 1-2?
Yeah, I'm Wisconsin, Iowa 1-2. I do think Iowa's defense is going to be very good. It always is. And the Fed, their special teams are usually good. They got some personnel to change, but I think that they'll be okay. Cade McNamara has come in as the leader of that team, but offensively, it's really interesting because Brian Ferentz, you know, got that 1-year contract, the offensive coordinator, slight pay cut. Has to average 25 points a game, and the team's got to win 7 games. It's this absurd contract with a lot of requirements and prerequisites, but that's a big leap from last year considering what Iowa's offense was. But Wisconsin, I still think, has the most talent. I think Fickell will win right away there. It's going to be interesting, though, because that's a team designed to run the ball that's going to incorporate a little air raid and up-tempo from Phil Longo, who comes in as the offensive coordinator from North Carolina.
All right, more with Wes Reynolds. We'll get the audio worked out, too. We'll talk Jonathan Taylor. We'll talk golf. And if there are any other sleeper team in the Big Ten, that's next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. If you're planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log in today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense are
remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Wes Reynolds kind enough to join us for a couple segments here at College Football Week. I want to get to Jonathan Taylor and the Colts, and I want to get to something that happened in golf yesterday with Wes. But last thing about the Big Ten as we kick off College Football Week here, because we can find the conversation, or I did anyway, to Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State in the East, and Wisconsin and Iowa in the West. You like Penn State as a 6-1 shot, worth a bet to win the Big Ten for the reasons you stated. Is there any other team, and it doesn't necessarily trigger a bet to win the Big Ten, Wes, but is there any other team in the conference that you actually think is far better than the market considers them to be?
Yeah, one that, I think it's going to be a little bit of a transition, but I think Purdue might be a little bit better. I don't expect them to contend for the West. They're going to be probably fighting to get 6 wins for bowl eligibility. But the Braum brothers, Jeff and Brian, back home at their alma mater in Louisville. So they bring in Ryan Walters, who's the defense first coach. He was the defensive coordinator at Illinois. And we saw that Illinois under Brett Bielema had a little bit of a resurgence last year. And Purdue did benefit, I know, from a battle of attrition in the Big Ten West. They, you know, had a relatively easy schedule. If you look at the last two games, there's not a lot positive. The fact that Michigan blew them out in the Big Ten title game, and then they got embarrassed in the Citrus Bowl by LSU. But new offensive coordinator, it is Graham Harrell, who used to play at Texas Tech. Mike Leach's disciple comes in from West Virginia. They do have a new quarterback with Aiden O'Connell gone. Hudson Card, the highly touted Texas transfer, is going to be the new quarterback. But Purdue can run the ball, and they hadn't been able to run the ball for years, but they were able to run the ball a little bit last year. I think the defense is going to be good. They're going to have that 3-4 scheme that Walters ran at Illinois, where they led the nation in scoring defense and were third for total defense in 2022. So they bring back several starters on that unit. I just thought 5.5. I think that this team wins 6 games. So I'm not saying that, you know, they're going to be like a 9 or a 10-win team. But I think even though it's a tougher schedule, I think Purdue's going to be a little bit better than they're being slotted in the season wins market.
Okay. Just wanted to find out your answer to that. Didn't want to leave everybody else out. Let's transition to the NFL. Kelly and I were talking AFC South earlier. Specifically, we were talking about Jonathan Taylor and the latest drama between he and Colts owner Jim Irsay. You have been a keen observer of the Indianapolis Colts for many years. This was a team that looked to be, you know, everybody's darling favorite to win the AFC South. And maybe not everybody's, but a lot of people thought, including myself, they'd win the AFC South last year. And the offensive line just goes to hell, which could not have been anticipated. And now we're at the point where Jonathan Taylor and the Colts are staring each other down. I'm not going to play. I might not play this year. Well, we may not have you play this year if we put you on this list. Where do you think this ends up with this team, and specifically the Taylor drama?
Yeah, the Colts never lack for drama coming into an offseason. I thought the biggest drama, honestly, was going to be, okay, when does this rookie Anthony Richardson finally see the field as a starter, and when does Shaq Leonard get back from his season-ending injury from last season? But in terms of this whole situation with Jonathan Taylor, Jonathan Taylor and this new agent he has, Tawa, who represents like a lot of UFC and a lot of MMA guys, now getting into the NFL. By the way, he's also Shaq Leonard's agent, is Mike Ikawa. But Jonathan Taylor, I think he and his representation have to just read the market right now. Mm-hmm. And the market is not favorable for the running back position. Look, Saquon Barkley took a big stand and said, you know, went on that podcast and was like, you know, blank them and blank this. And then a couple weeks later, he re-signed for $10 million, you know, which is not near what he wanted. Josh Jacobs, we have that going on in Las Vegas, a little bit of a standoff with the Raiders. So mm-hmm. A lot of these running backs next year, Gil, are going to be free agents. Throw in Austin Eckler to that. Perhaps Dalvin Cook. Include Jonathan Taylor and Jacobs and Saquon Barkley. So it's just the market. And the fact that Jonathan Taylor and his people and his representation reportedly want like $16 million a year, as good as Jonathan Taylor showed he could be a couple years ago, there's not a team in the league, not one, that would give him $16 million a year right now, particularly coming off an ankle injury where he only played 11 games last year and really was healthy for maybe half of them. So I tend to side with the Colts in terms of this negotiation. Now, putting Jimmy Irsay's comments aside, and we know that he could put out some random comments like he did on Saturday night after he and Taylor met on the bus up there in Westfield for training camp. I think eventually he's going to realize, well, I got to play. You know, I'm not going to be able to sit out. And then this back injury thing comes up, that it was a non-contact football back injury, which Taylor denies, of course, and denied on Twitter last night. So I think he's going to have no choice but to play. But I don't understand where he's coming from wanting this big extension. It's like, you're coming off an injury, you know, just go and ball out, lead the league in rushing like you did 2 years ago, and then maybe the Colts will extend you. The Colts have been willing to extend players. They made Quentin Nelson the highest paid offensive guard in the league. They did the same for Shaq Leonard. So it's not that the Colts are a cheap organization. They will spend the money and they will extend players, but I just think Taylor has no leverage here right now.
Yeah, so strange. The whole running back position that felt the need to have a summit of their own to discuss the state of the running back, and it doesn't appear that it really has gotten through to them that it is a...
The state of the running back union is not strong, Gil.
That is correct. Well said. All right, before we go, this has not as much to do with sports betting as it does with... just the nature of a sport that doesn't get emphasized enough. And Kelly and I were talking about this off air. So the 3M Open happens. Lee Hodges wins it. By the way, how was it from a betting perspective, real quick, from you?
Not one of my better events. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So the point I want to make is Lee Hodges wins it basically coast to coast. JT Poston heading into the final hole is three shots back. It was 23 under for Hodges, 20 under for Poston. Len Hochberg writes about this here, where basically, in the end, JT Poston, it wasn't quite a tin cup situation, but JT Poston decided the only way he could win the tournament was to go all out on something. And in the end, what ends up happening, he ends up dropping. He triple bogeys 18. He ends up in a T2 situation with Laird and Streelman. Not only does he cost himself $260K, but can we throw up that other one real quick here? Because I want to read some of these and get your thoughts on this. Len Hochberg, JT Poston sounded noble, but his unnecessary triple on 18 could cost him a lot more than $260K. He also lost 90 FedEx points. Those 90 would have ensured a top 50 for a berth in the BMW Championship. And also every 24 designated event would have been 38th in points. Now he's 49th. Every designated event. And then the other two tweets there, Kelly, if you would. JT Poston himself responding, to Kyle Porter. Kyle Porter at CBS saying JT Poston needed to make seven of the last to wrap up solo second and win $850K. He made an eight to fall into T2 and win $590K, $260K hole. And JT Poston said, not out here to finish second, trying to win, would make that decision 10 times out of 10 under the circumstances. I guess the question, Wes, is should he make that 10 times out of 10?
Maybe not 10 times out of 10, but Poston is in a little bit of a different situation, though, because he is exempt through 2024 on the PGA Tour, having won the John Deere Classic last July. And you get the two-year exemption when you win a regular PGA Tour event, which he did. So, yeah, it cost him a little points. He does drop to 49. By the way, it's the top 70 now. It's not the top 125 anymore.
Right.
It's the top 70 that get into that first event at the FedEx St. Jude Classic down in Memphis, and then the top 50 at the BMW, and then, of course, the usual top 30 at the Tour Championship down at Eastlake in Atlanta. So, look, I understand, and I like that attitude from JT Poston just in general. He's like, hey, I got to do what I have to do to win. Yeah, he cost himself some money, but he's in a lot different situation than some guy that's, like, scrambling to keep his card. So I give him a little bit of a pass on this one.
Wes, always a pleasure. We appreciate it, man. Thank you.
You bet, guys. Thank you.
Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds 1. That's the number one. Kelly, you see it a little differently with JT Poston?
Well, so with Wes talking about, he's talking about being clear for the PGA Tour next year.
Yeah.
The designated events, though, I don't think he's necessarily in yet.
The elevator ones,
and
right.
That's where you get the chance to win $3 million.
Yes.
I'm saying the chance of winning that much more money that you did, that you played yourself out of, is huge. And then the playoff positioning is massive.
I wish we would I know we're about winnings and you know, our bets and stuff, but I wish broadcast would focus more on the consequences of this kind of stuff broadly, not only the money, but that as well. Lombardi Line is next. Enjoy from Visa, the Sports Betting Network.